wrapping up an hour of the Aphex Twin. Richard D. James from rainy old England, aka Aphex Twin. Music from the merch desk, dated 2016 to 2023, released in late 2024, December 2024. We're currently in 2025. Hey, listen, if you want to know the track list, I'm not going to read out the track list. Do you even understand how Aphex Twin does his song titles? Come on. I know you weren't born yesterday. But yeah, we're 13 tracks from Music from the Merch Desk, which is like, I think it's about 2.5 hours total. It's like 38 tracks, which came out. It's just a digital... Apparently, a bunch of this stuff is like limited edition vinyl that you could have got at the shows or something. I did see Aphex Twin once. It was in 2001. Oh my god. It was pretty awesome. So yeah. And it was right after the Boredoms. It was literally right after the Boredoms, Vision Creation, New Sun Boredoms, which was amazing. And then it was like, hey, how about some Aphex Twin? I'm pretty sure that was the way it worked, yeah. I was out of my head, if you know what I'm saying. I know how to do it right. I know how to experience live music. I'm a failure at a lot of things in life, but experiencing live music, I am in the upper percentile. Anyway, 13 tracks from Aphex Twin. Really cool stuff. I've actually just made this for myself, and I've listened to it a bunch, so I was like, hey, I'm filling in for Fabio. How about some Aphex Twin? So anyway... one of the tracks in there was was Aphex Twin remixing Luke Vibert, so that was cool, because those guys are both cool. I originally typed in and said Lunk Vibert, which is funny. Anyway, this is the last track, and we're just about out of here. Thanks for listening. I will be filling in for Nate K. I think it's May 23rd, Friday night, so check that out if you're around. Lots of archives if you're new to the Spin Age Blasters experience. I got like 380 shows or something like that, so go for it. You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Hardy Wood.
I know that the Miracle Nutrition Show with Hardy White went long. How? It doesn't have the usual intro music. It just has, I don't know, a partial skit or something, or someone humming.
Yeah.
Imagine, if you will, the Scooby-Doo gang, but they are of retirement age, and now they have all moved to the villages, and I think it might go something like this. I would never do that to you. Oh my goodness, I would never prey on your nostalgia. And I believe it was Tony Soprano who said, "Remember when is the lowest form of conversation." But I would add that remember when is also the basis of culture. In our friend groups and our families, we say, "Hey, remember when we all went on vacation to Panama City Beach, Florida? And we drove past that strip club, and just as we were going by, you had to pull over and be sick. And so I took a picture of you being sick in front of a strip club." And we all have that memory, and it's special to us. And it also occurs on a larger scale, not just friends and people that we've actually shared an experience with, but one we've shared a cultural experience with. So we might say something like, "Remember when Bob Newhart put that, got a raisin stuck up his nose?" I don't know, that was not an episode of Bob Newhart. But I'll tell you something that was an episode of television. A couple years back, I was at a wedding, and I met Stephen Zacharias, a television and movie writer. And he told me, among other things, and I think one of them was Revenge of the Nerds, he had written the All in the Family episode where Edith is going through menopause, and she yells at Archie, "Stifle it," which is his catchphrase, not hers. And like his overstuffed chair, she is not allowed to sit in his catchphrase. And she does anyway, and this is because in that day, there were maybe three television shows on. And so opposite All in the Family, who knows, I got to look it up. But it was something that nobody watched. And could you imagine, "I got a new TV show, when is it on?" It's opposite All in the Family. Well, if there was videotape, I'd tape it. But videotape didn't exist yet. And then when it did, Sally Struthers did ads touting degrees for different things, and among them, VHS repair, like that. It was great. And it's all connected. But you see, I said, I don't remember that episode, but I could see people remembering it. And I thought, here I am meeting you. Now, that's a remember when we met Stephen at the wedding? And then, on top of that, see, remember is a culture when this happened? And we go back in time, even for things that we didn't really remember. Remember when Mo hit Curly? Remember when Hitler invaded Poland? Remember when Mo was involved in a series of international assassinations? Remember when Shemp killed FDR? That never happened. Wait a minute, let me look it up. It didn't. What kind of a Mandela effect is this? It's Mandela. Well, I don't know. Is it Mandela? Is it Mandela? I remember that happening. No. So we do remember things collectively, and then we have these cultural touchstones too, you know, and we'll say things like, "Remember when the tortoise and the hare had a race?" And it's just remember the lesson, or remember these stories from this world that you've been given, this big TV show that you've been cast in. It's like you're showing up and everybody is in a play. And you've just got there, and you say, "Well, what? I don't understand. What am I? What role am I playing?" And they go, "Just do it." And you think, "Well, wait a minute." So it's like that. It's like showing up for theater every day, and really, there's no script, and you don't know what you're doing. And but Larry David looks like he's doing most of the work, so I'll just pretend I'm talking to someone at a cafe. It's not quite like that, because there doesn't seem to be any main characters, even though a lot of people, we talk about that today, say people think they're the main character. That was never like that.
It's always been like that. We just have different names that we call people. Isn't that fun? Based on like cultural stuff. Because I remember, you know, back in my day, they'd say, oh, what a Professor Chokum child he is. Because everybody had read Charles Dickens' Hard Times. I don't know if that's true or not, but things like that. Mrs. Malaprop and her malapropisms. So you can have malapropisms and someone who does malapropisms, or even Spoonerisms, and not know who Mr. Spooner and Mrs. Malaprop is. What? I'm not sure. Oh, friends, I believe my radio show is a lot like having a substitute teacher, isn't it?
We're here for chemistry, but we've got an incompetent sub.
And yes,
why do we need babysitting? Why can't we just have free time?
These are all excellent questions, and I would love to explore some of them with you because I love to do that kind of exploring. Oh my gosh, I'm not really a child at heart, but I'm someone who likes to be around children because otherwise they feel intellectually inferior. And it's only around children if I can be a bit of a genius. I have experience, though, being around children who then go on to be physicians and things like that. And maybe I should have, what did I do wrong? No, you want them to be. I'm just thinking, I should have savored that moment more when I was the smartest person in the room. It's like, y'all don't know anything about, you know, different types of beer or whatever. I don't know what you say to children. I love any kind of lesson. That's the thing with kids. That's why I'm one of those free form generalist substitute teachers. There's not enough generalists, and everybody is specializing in something. Even the nerds. People go, I'm a nerd. Well, what are you into? And they say something very, very specific. I'm in a specific type of trading card. I'd describe it to you, but you probably don't know what I'm talking about. And I wouldn't. The subcultures, I've been in subcultures so small, I'm not in them. No one's in them. It's a subset of zero. It's very exclusive. And why? Well, there's not even a group yet. Not yet. That's the thing. Sometimes my interest groups, the things I'm into, haven't happened yet. So I'm preparing. I have folders and folders of empty sleeves, just plastic sleeves, that I'm going to put something in. And I just know that thing is coming. I just don't know what it is yet. It could just be Gary Coleman trading cards. Who knows? It could be anything, any beautiful thing, any memory made into something fetishized, made into something tangible that I can have an object. And then I can use that object to help me summon up past memories and feelings. That's how I get the feelings back. So that's magic. We used to do it with, there's so many things you can do it with. What got really popular in the 20th century were family photographs. So you take a family photograph and you look at a picture of your dead dog and you just weep and weep because there you have a wonderful reminder. You're just sent right back to that moment and you get to re-experience those things. Childhood photographs, old family, friends or something, you hold it, you look at it and you can use it. Because now you have something tangible, and you can do that with objects, too. So, you know, oh, this is my grandfather's hernia belt with the pads on there held his inguinal hernia in. Bless him. So when I wear it, I think of him, and it still smells like canoe aftershave. So things like that. We have memories, beautiful things. If you've ever been lucky enough to lose a family member, and you go through their stuff, and so there's so many treasures. Most of them are just treasures to them, you know, and it's so hard. You have to make all those calls, you know, to find out. You make about 10 calls before you find out people do not buy used dentures. You know, that's a custom thing. Could have used the money. My brother-in-law tried to sell hangers. He said, can we sell clothes hangers? I don't think people buy them, but I mean, maybe in bulk. I don't know. Maybe it's like copper pipe or something. I came home. All clothes hangers are gone. If wire gets scarce, it might be like that. You think things now that are common might be.
I didn't even realize until wartime, you know, how much
things like those plastic eggs that stockings come in, how much they're worth now because they use them for bombs.
I don't know. Stuff like that happened in World War II. You say, well, I feel like I'm not, you know, where's all the, I need more steel. They say, oh, the steel's being used for the war effort. You go, yes, but I need it for my swords that I make for my medieval fun group. I don't know what, but things like that were deeply affected in World War II. Do you need this ration cards? You know. Now, the way you get around that, I was just watching the Rossellini movie, Rome Open City. Just storm the bakery and take what you need. And that's one thing, but you got it. That takes so much coordinating. They did that before social media. How do you even get everybody on the same page like that? I could see sending out a tweet. Before the Nazi soldiers get there, let's storm the bakery. You know, signed, senior, I forget. It's a wonderful movie, though, if you haven't seen it. I would like to now talk to you as if we were in a world where there was no remember when. Like we just got here. Because the remember when world does strike me as vaguely dreamlike. You know, you just are plopped into some scenario. I don't know what's going on. I guess I'll figure everything out from context. And you sort of do, right? Someone's yelling the name Brownie to me, so I guess I'm Brownie. That kind of thing. And this happens in life, too. You know, people are calling me this. I guess that's who I am. Is there any room for me to self-define? And if I do, will the director come and hit me over the head with that board that they clap so they can sync the sound?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I do. I do, though. And there's always the wonderful thing nowadays. Here's the difference. Here's the difference between me and some of the old-time radio people that would speak. And that is that mine now is unfortunately recorded. And I don't know that I like that very much because I really do enjoy sort of the impermanence of stuff or making something memory only so that the original can never be reconsulted. So it goes into people's memories and then you never really get to revisit the tape. So it's like instant replay. It's like they're just making the call on the field. They don't get to go back and look at the tape from a different angle. Because there's always a different angle. It's the way it's hit and meant to hit, I think, that matters. So I began performing, and even though there were, of course, recording devices, my goodness, no one bothered to record things that I did on stage or set or shows or anything like that, especially music. This goes for if you were ever in a band. If you were ever in a band and you played a show and people loved it, and then you heard like a board tape and you go, wait a minute. That's because there's something else going on when you're in the presence of other human beings. There's an agreement. There's a kind of reciprocity. There's a kind of recursion, a resonance, a vibration that happens between the two, and it builds and it makes something. There's an emergent property. Sometimes the emergent property is suck, and sometimes the emergent property is joy or ecstasy or something. But these are all something that have to come out of an agreement between these people. Nobody can sort of instigate it by themselves. It all has to go out and then echo and everything. Now, when you take a picture of it, it's just like a ghost. You know, it's usually not there. So I remember I felt a presence, and then I snapped a picture of it, and there was nothing there. Does that mean that there was nothing there? It doesn't mean that there was nothing there. Because even if you don't believe in ghosts, if there's lots of things that don't come out on film. I have some friends whose complexions don't come out on film. You know, it's not capturing everything. And I have also some friends that are just made of heat.
And unless you have the right film, people don't see them. They just come out of some kind of wavy, blurry cloud. My heat friends. Isn't that nice? Sometimes I'll think I see them. You know, it'll be a hot day and the road, you know, it'll be like kind of mirage thing. And I'll see squiggly lines and I'll be like, Brian! But it isn't. It's just hot air. Let us now forget not everything we've learned. I don't want you to blank your mind. I was watching the Manson thing, you know, and I wrote a little poem called, and it's beautiful. I think it's called, If I Were Manson. If I Were Manson. No, it's not. But I was thinking about this idea of controlling people or being manipulative. And I was thinking there's degrees of manipulative because, gosh, who's not manipulative? And is there no one more manipulative than an infant? Woo, boy. They can get whatever they want without behavior, with just their behavior, no words or anything. So I'm just going to look at you and scream, and you're going to know what I want. I'm going to manipulate you. I can bring people into the room that way. Now, some people just learn that lesson too well, and they go, wow, that really works. I have a sort of control over others. Now, this is something we learn as infants, that we can use other people's concern, empathy, fear, all sorts of things. We can, to some degree, manipulate it with very human things. And we learn how to do that before we learn language. Now, you retain the power. Some people keep using it. And that's why we say that's infantile. And so you don't want to be emotionally manipulative of others because, my goodness, I don't know how to break it to you. It makes you really, at the very least, annoying and at the worst, a life-threatening menace. Oh, that's the version that didn't make it onto television. You saw Dennis the Menace. You didn't see Life-Threatening Menace. But he was. I watched a couple episodes of Dennis the Menace, and had that been a real gun that he was always waving and not a toy one, I mean, this kid had problems. Dennis the Menace had antisocial personality disorder. I don't want to diagnose or anything, but, like, what the heck? You know? Poor Mr. Wilson. And he's made out to be some kind of, like, he's so impatient, the neighbor. He thinks, like, he'd knock him off ladders and stuff. Oh, yeah, you need to be more patient of children, Mr. Wilson, with your traumatic brain injury, because this child has no self-control. Blessed are we and the children in us. Oh, the children, so you do have a child inside. What a lot of times they don't tell you is that it's a problem, too. Because you think, the child in me. The child in you needs a lot. Needs a lot of, like, you know, because it doesn't know a lot. And it's very, very, doesn't really realize other people are having the same experience. So it makes it kind of selfish. It does seem others, it kind of comes out sort of, you know, a psychopath. And it has to be taught. Say, listen, you, I got feelings too. And the reason I know that is because all those themes persist into 50s TV westerns even. Listen, you're acting like nobody else around here has to drink water. We got feelings too. So throughout history, people have to advocate, say, I'm an alive human being, even though you don't think I am. And why do we have to go through that over and over and over again? A couple things. The remember when is imperfect, and people just don't live very long. And they stay really profoundly stupid for most of the existence. Sometimes all of it. A lot of times they will sort of have an awakening at their most, when they're most powerless and at least influential. That's a wonderful thing. I love that. That's what's so funny to me about life. At least it keeps you smiling. Oh my goodness. Where's that smile? If I was writing a really scary movie or something where there's a murderer. That's what he'd say to people. Now, come on now, where's that smile? I think it's about the creepiest thing. I think like a just a really smiley Andy Griffith is the scariest kind of thing. Come on now, it can't be that bad. And I don't, that's you, Hardy. No, it's maybe it is. I don't know. Oh my goodness, no. I think I've been pretty much consistently gentle. It doesn't mean I'm never angry or anything like that. I just try to be that kid that, you know, I still do kid things and I get it wrong a lot. But at the end of the day, I try to be, you know, good friend and classmate to everybody. You know, as I work through my self-discovery, you know, that I'm a little bit helpful, that I'm at least not problematic. And I think that's something to shoot for. And I see that. This is my I have lots of objections to Gomer Pyle, but USMC, C-3PO. But one of them is like, I just don't think he's a good soldier. And I won't get into the rule following and the, but I think there's something messed up about that show. I can't quite put my finger on it. And you go, of course he's not a good soldier because he's stupid. But he's not stupid. That's not what's going on. You know, it's some kind of like cultural thing or naivete or childlike thing, but then it isn't that either. And that's why it's disturbing to me. And I'm going to have to work it out. And I don't want to really watch enough of it. But why would you even bother? For nostalgia? No, I feel like I'm a virologist and the viruses are popular culture ideas. Images, remember whens, and I want to, we allow them in, and they do work, and they help mold our worldview. They're actively painting the backdrops, the sets of the play that we're in, you know, and it'd be nice to know something about them, you know, what they're doing, what assumptions we're making just sort of based on using them as evidence. You see what I'm saying? So it's almost like experience, a fake experience. So you see an episode of Gilligan's Island and you start to think things subtly. And you might not with Gilligan's Island, but when you watch more serious art or theater or something, this does go on. But you see it, so let's say 12 Angry Men or Gilligan's Island, whichever you feel more comfortable imagining. Imagine one of them right now. And just saying, basically, I remember sort of experiencing this situation where there were people trying to come to an agreement, and only one person believed a thing, all right? The defendant is innocent. I saw a Japanese soldier. So no one believes Gilligan. No one believes, what is it, Glenn Ford? Somebody. Or is it Henry Fonda? Henry Ford? See, that's a scenario, and even if we've never been in it, we've been in it, you know? And so you use that. I think your brain uses that, especially if it's never really happened. Then when you're sitting on a jury, you start thinking about Gilligan's Island or something. This is absolutely the way that life works and why it was, I can't figure this out, because it's chaos. Because there might be cause and effect, but they're not dominoes in an OK Go video. It's a kind of cause and effect, I think, where, you know, causes are hidden. Go back, you know, millions of years. I don't know whether the future affects things that happen now. I'll just say they do. I love people who, if you have a wacky idea, write up your wacky idea, put it out there. And you'll get some people that are just absolutely stopped there on their journey. That's where they set up camp, is this idea that you think, well, that's a possibility, but it's no proof for it. It lives and is alive in someone's worldview. It's a wonderful thing. I don't know if it's wonderful, but it's a fact. So everything that's fact is fiction, and every fiction is really a Hang on. Hang on. Something like that. Oh, bless you. I don't know, there's a difference. The minute you storify a fact, you're fiction. So everything is really a fiction, but there's really reality. And I'll tell you, I only know it because I recognize it from the odor. That's why I know I'm truly alive. That's why the internet doesn't bother me too much. It's because I really, really, I don't pay attention to any words coming from someone I can't smell. Because I know, I don't know, they're talking to me. Did you know this? Did you know that social media like Facebook and Twitter is partially inspired by the book of Daniel? That when Nebuchadnezzar is sitting there and he's looking at his blank wall and then words mysteriously appear on the wall, just some kind of phrase from, he doesn't know who sent it, but it says you are weighed in the scales and found wanting, and he feels bad about himself, but he doesn't even know who sent the message. Many, many Tekelufarsin, it was called. That was the social media service back then. So that comes from that, and all online quizzes come from the father of eugenics, Francis Galton. Oh my goodness, these are all really facts. And they are. I'll talk more about that, but I like to know where ideas that I take for granted come from, whether they're really something that someone's looked at the natural world and came up with, or whether some nonsense I've just inherited that my people insist on believing, sort of. And I think a lot of it's the latter. Oh, my goodness. So when I behave in a crazy manner, I'm trying to break out from the play for a minute. I'm trying to sneak behind the scenes, see what's going on. Because everybody's caught up in doing their part and everything. And there are people, there's plenty of people you can find wandering around going like, I think this might be just a play. Yeah, I know. I'm behind here, too, thinking some of these things that we're saying aren't right. People looking at me telling who I am when I know who I am, and they're saying I'm someone else. They're looking and say, I got a different name for you than you call yourself. Well, that's not right. I can no. Well, I'm here. I'm on the inside. No, you're not. I'm telling you. That kind of thing. Child stuff. Infantile. So, you're Toby. I don't think that's my name. Toby. I'm pretty sure that's not my name. Well, so they'll beat you into it. That's how important it is. So they'll make you, force you into the play. This is who you are now. This is your role. And that doesn't see, if you're for any kind of freedom, a lot of people, when they say freedom, mean freedom from agency. Because it's rules are keep you, I'll just go, just put me in some thing, treadmill or something. There's this device that I see advertised. So I watch the channel for dying people. And every once in a while, there's this advert for this pseudo-exercise device that's these pedals. But it's motorized. So you put you sit down, and you have this little device that looks like an exercise bike, except it's, they're going around for you. You just strap your feet in, and it moves your feet. I mean, isn't that for people in a coma to keep them from getting blood clots or something? I don't know that it's exercise.
I step up from my desk and look at my legs. I look like, who's the blonde bodybuilder from the 80s whose legs were too big? That guy. So, but it's from this device, and you can get, now they've got one that you can get even faster speeds.
That they do tout that. And I thought that Tom somebody. And they did Platts. And they, but you're not going to look like that, I don't think. Oh, my friends, we get to visit together like this. So for some of you who are listen to me like riding home in the car, it's like there's a creepy little elf in your glove compartment or something. Who lives in your car, and you've got to interact with him every time you get in.
Hey, buddy.
Oh, hey, I'm riding home.
How was your day today? It was good, I bet. Hey, I got a story for you.
That's not so bad, I guess. I don't mind those. I used to, I don't take a lot of Ubers or stuff now, but I did take cabs back in the day, and I mean, sometimes you'd get a chatty cab driver, and it was always better than radio. And maybe I just really want to be a chatty cab driver. The thing about the chatty cab drivers, you really can't get out until you're where you want to be. Whereas this radio, unfortunately, there's a dial or a kill switch. Kill the person talking. And you can do that in a button. I don't want him to really die. Well, I do in a way. Everyone dies. So, but you can change the channel or something. You don't have to listen to me. Oh, my goodness. And I could see. And also, I don't mind you having enough. I can't imagine being a jar of Nutella and thinking like, I don't, you know. That man, I rarely forgot that. I'm kind of tired of, I love Nutella, but I'm tired of it. That's okay, right? You understand that. If it's a good thing, maybe you get too much of a good thing. So it could have been a jar of marshmallow whip. I only got about a third of the way through, and I don't think I ever want to have any marshmallow whip again. People say that about my archives. So that's fine. It does its job. And I like that. My goodness, we all can't. If I was something, I don't want to be a Flintstones vitamin. I don't want to be a cup of coffee. Oh, that might not be bad. I'm trying to think of things you'd have every day that you don't mind having a steady diet of. But also, you don't have them all day long or you get diarrhea. Right? So just that couple cups in the morning is fine. But if you listen to, let's say you listen to Clay Pigeon all day long, you go, oh, I love Clay, but now I got diarrhea. So everything has its time, maybe. It's got its portion. Like it's just been Passover, so I had some haroset. Now, granted, it was a Persian recipe, so it had strawberries in it, and I think even bananas or something. But anyway, it's a symbolic food of which you're supposed to eat like a teaspoon. But it's so good. And what I do is I eat not the symbolic portion, but the portion that begins to affect the bowels. And it can do that, and it confuses the bowels. Because on one hand, the bowels say, I really want to, wad this up like glue. But then also part of me is like, wow, this is a lot of oil and fruit and everything. Maybe this should get the express. Send this on the one that has no stops. Right to the destination. Oh, my goodness, Terminus. That was the early name for Atlanta. I also learned, first of all, I really like Cincinnati. And I did a whole presentation one time, basically centered around Cincinnati. And I don't live in Cincinnati. I live near it, though. But I never explored the fact that it's the birthplace of Charles Manson, or that his mother's from Ashland, Kentucky, where my friend Matt is from. Shout out to Matt! And all, and I guess all the Maddox family in Ashland, Kentucky. I'm blessing they had nothing to do with any notorious family members. None of us do. And I guess what I'm saying is that, I've already said it. It doesn't have a hidden meaning, maybe. It's just a fact. Is it a fact? It could be. But it's a meaningless one in many respects. I can't do anything with it, and I don't want to. It's just another thing. Unless I had some situation where it's like, name as many things about Cincinnati as you can, or, somebody gets it. And you go, well, that couldn't happen. And then I say, 1001 Arabian Nights, because that's the theme. You got to keep telling stories, or you're doomed. Isn't that interesting?
Why do you say that?
I say, isn't that interesting, because I'm trying to do it as mind control. I'm trying to put a thought in your head that it's interesting. I know it's not. I'm pretty sure it's not. But if I say something like, isn't that interesting? Or I bet you didn't know that. I can tell you a lot of things that you didn't know. 99% will be because you didn't know them because they're not true. So That's no accomplishment, really, telling somebody something they didn't know. I don't want to rat on my mother, but my mother was about to gossip with me. And she said, the other day I was told something I didn't know about so-and-so. I was like, no, that's a mom. There's a name for it. If someone told you something that you didn't know about someone else who didn't want you to know it, that's called gossip. And that's problematic. Because I think the minute you do it, you start seeing the world a little wrongly. And that infects you. That's why a lot of things you say, moral tradition saying this thing is wrong. A lot of times it's not that it's wrong. It's that it's really the obvious path to disaster. It has nothing to do with any gods or rules or anything like that. A lot of times there's human behavior that's just a recipe for disaster. And if you need it in the form of an Aesop fable, then so be it. That's the problem. A lot of times, I think Aesop fables came about because somebody was trying to morally instruct somebody and use people as examples, and they get getting hung up on it.
There's these two people running the race.
Who are they? That kind of thing, you know. Where are they from? Well, there's no Greek that would do that. That kind of thing. It's like, it's a damn tortoise. All right. The other one's a bunny. And then they're all right with it. So, okay, that makes sense now. So that's why they use the animals. Because the people are all accounted for, their opinions and their behavior. So now I see, now when I'm looking at a grasshopper do it, it makes more sense. We can learn from the insects. But now we not all get those lessons or anything, and that, I don't want to blame people who didn't get basic lessons and things not to do as a person that are disastrous. You know, we make fun of like instructions on products that say, you know, oh, don't put it in your ear. But bless, I mean, if it's not, then that needs to be said, then yes, it is a problem. And we can mock that all we want. But maybe we should get to the source. You know, why do people want to put stuff in their ear? And what could we be giving them that's better to put in their ear? And they like to put plastic in their ears a lot. But maybe we could give them something else, like pudding. I don't know. There's who knows what's going to happen in the future. They're not earbuds. It's just this like liquidy stuff that you rub on the outside of your ear and it picks up frequencies.
What?
Yeah, it's a gel instead of speakers. We don't have speakers anymore. We just have salves that we rub on ourselves in different areas and they do things. But why? Because they're nanobots.
What?
It looks like KY, right? But you put it in your ear and there's nanobots in it.
I don't know.
It's true. I know a lot of things a lot of stuff I bring from the future I'm allowed to say because no one believes me. It's kind of wonderful. But the thing about don't believe anybody you can't smell, that's just somebody we say in the future because of robots and everything. And it goes for online. You can use it now. People get, you know, you're minding your business on Blue Sky and somebody's like, you're dumb, you're a dumb dummy. And you don't even know if it's a human. And you feel it. You feel it viscerally. And I mean, unless you're Spock or Kwai Chang Kain, you're going to be, you know, at least a little bit, your heart rate might go up. And you go, this is a threat. Because there's impossible to read words. And even if you were reading a novel and somebody said those words and you know they're not talking about you, you've just read them. So that's why our heart rates go up in movies and everything. It's just some things are just autonomic, you know. So I look at this bed and I go, well, now, wait a minute, right? I don't even know. You don't know me. I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know who you are. And then I go up to my screen and I smell. And I say, if I smell a human or a dog or something, then I'll know that maybe there actually is a threat. But otherwise, it's just coming on. It's on my wall. It's many, many Tekalu Farson. I don't know who sent that. If let's say it is God, God's going to write something on a wall in a weird language? I don't know. I'm not buying it. So I'm okay with it in the Book of Daniel because it's a story and I can go into other things in that story that are true, not historically true maybe, but they're true as in it's how life works. For instance, you know, if you have a power, like you're a king or something and you're a ruler, you're not going to get to the place spiritually as the person that like you admire, like Daniel. You're not going to have that relationship with God that you desire if your business is crushing the enemy on the field of battle. That makes sense, you know. So the king in the story has to give everything up to get to where he wants to go. That's because material things and power are not the route to where you think. And it's all about, it's not that they're not fine, but a lot of people think that that's going to provide them with something that they desire. But the thing that they desire, there's a different road there. So if they really want that thing, they're going to have to hop off of the one road and onto the other. What road do you want to be on, Hardy? Well, I would love to say I picked it. I think it picked me. A lot of us are like that. Say, I chose a life of humility. No. Oh, bless. My life of humility chose me. It says you would, and it's been wonderful. I've had this thing where I've always been lucky. If you're sort of like, I'm going to speak to you really frankly because I'm fine with myself. So, and why? Because people have all sorts of different size brains and they're all different. And if you're really, 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 really committed to the idea that we are all equal and all lives are the same and everything, then everybody's you can't quantify people's characteristics. You just can't rank them. They're equal or they're not. And so when it comes to intellect or accomplishments and everything, I find it very easy not to compare myself to people, right? But we find ourselves surrounded by people who like comparing and are maybe in the middle of a lifelong comparing binge. And maybe a lot of the things they've done and so-called accomplished are because they feel that the way that others perceive them has to match this thing within themselves, and it doesn't, and it won't, unless you see me and you put some respect on me. And I had a very early exposure to things, to like Taoism and to like weird religious ideas where you just become sort of undesirable and loathsome to people as a way of shedding ego so that you can see things more clearly. I've not really succeeded at all, because every time someone's wanted to lift me up and say, hey, Hardy, can you come do this for me? I go, yeah, like that. So I don't, the minute that I'm tested, I fail. So that's a problem. But I've tried to remain humble so that I can see the world as it really is and other people too, you know, not compare myself, not to feel intimidated, see all humans as my siblings and even other creatures, you know, and to gain better understanding. Whether I will ever get it, who knows, probably not. And I'm certainly running out of time, but there's only the now. So I would say I'm encouraging you to, I don't know what I'm encouraging you to do. Nothing. I don't want to encourage. Bless you. I just want to stand here. You can just look at me and say, all right, there's somebody doing a thing, and maybe I could do that. What is he doing? I don't know. He doesn't know. I'm just making sure I do it wrong, because I'm telling you, when you do it right, you get, what's the equivalent? I think it's, you don't want your pies to be too good. Just kind of good enough. And I would even say that way with your art, too. You know, you probably don't have any control about how big your audience is. But if you could control it, I would say always keep your pies modest. And here's a way of guarantee. I don't know. People who succeed usually have to try their very hardest, sometimes harder than their hardest. By succeed, I mean by society standards. They're doing things that sometimes constitutionally they're not are at the very edges of their abilities. And I'm saying that life will reward you if you do things in a half-assed manner. You can do it longer. You can sustain it. You know, half-assed is not no-assed. But if you use all of your ass, that's all you need to save some. And that's why I say, you know, you do things as a, you know, don't milk the cow. Don't butcher it. You know, so we're up. Cheese again? That's because I'm milking the cow. I'm not cutting it up. I can serve you steak for a short period of time, or we can do cheese for a really long time. And I have bringing you cheese. I bring the cheese. There's no doubt about it. There's no one that could say Hardy White does not bring the cheese. I like cheese on Hardy White. You look that up. It's a sandwich recipe. Grilled cheese. I don't know what that would be. You could grill me, like question me, while you're wearing some kind of crazy teeth. Some shiny teeth. I'd like that too. So all kinds of grills. Oh, my goodness. You could have a chromium grill. With the on the side. What am I? Oh, Nappy Roots. That's what it is. Do you ever get a song in your head and you go, I don't know what, I just got a piece of it? Oh, yes, you do, because you're all FMU listeners.
Oh, we got songs in our head all the time.
Bless you. Hey, I always have a standing apology to anybody who tuned in for music, you know?
I was planning on stripping the paint off of this end table. I put on FMU, which is usually pretty good. Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get. But today I just got a guy talking. And it wasn't the good kind of talk, like Mother Sarah.
I don't know. I'm glad I picked somebody non-existent. Could be Mother Sarah. There was an angry nun on TV. I know y'all remember her. I'm not going to say her name. But she would like scold people and everything. I just remember that. And I don't know. I miss that a little bit. There should be more channels. There's so many channels. It feels like some of them could just be like a scolding nun. And oh, this is being a comforting a guy who has an ice cream truck, who is a gentle older fella who was injured in the war, who just loves people and he loves to talk. And I would just like to see that on television. So he's leaning over the ice cream. He's holding the ice cream cone. I don't want an AI version of it. I guess what I want is real life. I love that too. Oh, I'm going to go out and meet people today. After I get done this radio show, I'm going to go walking down the street. I'm going to be skipping around like SpongeBob, you know, saying, everybody, I'm your neighbor. I'd love to meet you. Oh, I think I'd be locked up. I get worried about, I feel like these suburban neighborhoods were supposed to be isolated from one another for economic and political reasons. That if we all came together, you know, and sort of formed a block, could you imagine everybody knowing and liking each other who lives on some large acreage? That's a problem. So you got to keep people all divided. I think that's a. So I remember reading that about my Irish ancestors. They'd inherit land. Instead of sharing it, they'd divide it up with walls until it was so subdivided nobody could use it for anything. And I guess this country said, man, that's the type of, that's what we need here. Come do that here. And so I love it. And there's all so many things. I have ancestors from all many different cultures because everyone does. You go back a few generations, you'd be surprised.
Say, my great-great-great-great-grandfather,
who is almost not related to you, because you just said so many greats. You know how that's the way it works. That, you have nothing in common with that person, really.
I got his eyebrows.
Maybe. His eyebrows did not, you know, start a newspaper. There, they may have. They do that. They used to do that in old. I think that's a Monty Python thing where the eyebrows fly off of somebody and they go and do stuff. But I think before, I don't know whether before psychoactive drugs, whether that was a component of art, whether people's features went off and did stuff. Maybe Picasso. Oh, bless you. I was just at the Cincinnati Museum the other day, very briefly, making them nervous. Why? Because I run in and I run to painting. I know. It looks like I'm barging in and I'm going to steal a specific painting and run out. There is visibly, because they're looking for people that don't behave normally, so-called. But I think real art thieves or people who are really menace know to behave normally. I mean, why would I just flamboyantly come in the, you know, museum waving my arms going, I'm here to see the sergeants. Like, I'm not going to steal anything. So I didn't do that, literally. But I'm just running to see the sergeants. And there's a couple other paintings I just wanted to visit really quickly. I had to take a Rothko bath because it's like a synesthesia concert, one of those paintings. So I was in the museum, and I was looking at talking to friends about the sergeant there, the large early sergeant, Italian, or what is it called now? Venetian woman. They changed the name. And one of the guards comes over and he says, you know, there's a Van Gogh over there. I said, I know, you know. And a Cezanne. And they go, I know, yeah, okay, we'll go look at them, which I know and I'm familiar with them. And one of the reasons I was underwhelmed is they suck. It's wonderful to have. You should have, all museums should have some notable, famous artists, an example of something of theirs that sucks. Because it really is disheartening to people to think that there's such a thing as genius out there, that everybody hits everything out of the park. You know, we need to see that these masterpieces that people create are sometimes a one-off thing or some moment in their lives. And you have moments in your lives that can't be recreated. Oh, we long sometimes for times in our youth where we feel like things were really going well. Everybody was cheering over my band. Now they don't cheer for me anymore. It isn't really a lifelong cheering. That isn't really what you want anyway. That's not even what you want. And here's the thing too, you know, I think that you could look at that if I was Van Gogh now, and I'd look at that and say, there's this terrible thing I did, so what? I've been dead now so long, it doesn't matter. There's a brilliant thing I did, so what? I feel the same way about that brilliant thing as I do about that thing. And they are just impermanent, and they're going away. And what I have are the feelings. I don't want to be Van Gogh anymore because I think those feelings are, and they're torment and confusion. People don't like me. Why? I'm awful. Well, that's, you know, what are you going to do? That might be your position, too. Nobody likes me. Why? I don't like people. I know a handful of folks like that. I don't have any friends. Why? I don't like people. Well, there you go. I don't know. Maybe that could be some of it. I feel like that. I feel a little conflicted that way, too. Oh, my goodness. I do feel that. I say, I don't know myself. People say, hey, what are you doing? You want to go out for dinner? And I go, I don't know myself. How am I going to go out to dinner with you? And I say, well, I'm sorry. We were just going out like a group of people and thought we were, you know, all going to see the movie. Oh, okay. Well, I'll think about it. I remember if I had a friend in school that was like that, you'd call him up to say, hey, man, we're all going to Sally's bar. And he'd go, I don't know if I feel like going out. I'm like, dude, I'm not here to convince you. I'm letting you know, because if I didn't, you'd go, nobody let me know that they were going to Sally's bar. So that's the thing. What you want to do. And then I feel like this is a lesson I learned at some point in my life. When somebody calls you up and say, we're all going to Sally's bar, you say, cool, thanks, like that. And I know maybe a lot of kids haven't heard that yet. That's why I'm trying to school the younger generation. You want to, I mean, we could rehearse it if you want. Bring, 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 bring. Hey, we're all going to Sally's bar tonight, like at 9, because there's a band playing, my friend's band. What's your friend's band? The Swedish metal band Meshuggah. What? No, I'm kidding. It's, you, don't worry. But anyway, I just want to give you a heads up. Okay, thanks. Bye. I'm hanging up. I think in Sing Cultures they say that. I'm starting to add that. I use it because of my mom. Because goodbye doesn't do it. Or I gotta go or something. I have to literally say to my mom, I'm hanging up. That way she'll know. And even then, sometimes she calls back and says, we got cut off. So I've got to, sometimes I just have to say what I mean. And as someone on the radio who doesn't really want to say what I mean, I can be very difficult. My friends, I will say this with an open heart. Oh, my goodness. You're wonderful and you deserve dignity. Why? I don't know. I want dignity, and I feel like I can't have it unilaterally. I'm sorry. I don't know. That's what it takes for me to get there. But also, when I'm with people, I do feel what they're feeling. And your pain affects us all, and your joy affects us all. And I know it sometimes feels like weird and paradoxical, but if you can get to that state where you're in a group of people and you think, whether I'm feeling it or not, I'm going to project this thing. And if everybody else does it, a third thing will happen. You know? And it's pretty wonderful. And I think that's what art does for me. That's why I think art and religious services are so tied together, because what it is, it's this wonderful benevolent fooling. Like we're going to pretend together. And as we pretend, we're going to create something very real that will get inside of us and elevate us. And so I love you and respect you and think you deserve dignity. And you lift me up. I am so grateful for you, listener friend. We are a family. Not just people support the station. No, the human beings. I don't care what you believe or think right now. The reality of it is that we are. And we're connected. And we can lift each other up in a manner that you better than your dreams. And so I thank you for opening your heart to me, and I will to you. And our thing that we have will set an example for lost human beings, and we'll bring them in. And it'll be like, it won't be like the Manson thing. It'll be not gentle, and there'll be benefits like health care and other things like that. I love you so much. I'm silly. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and in New York City, online, WFMU.org, worldwide. I was briefly distracted. Why? Because this is not something I did, but I was going to quote Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon, and I decided, well, you can't do it in the Bruce Lee voice, so I'm going to do it in the Ernie Anderson voice. And I'll leave you with this. Ready? Don't look at the finger or you'll miss all the heavenly glory. Thank you. I'll see you again next week.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Thank you. can't stay. I can't go. You know you drive me crazy, and you keep keeping on treating me so cruel. It ain't cool. It's alright to be a fool.